class today?
Honestly surprised to see so many of you here again. The lowest dropout rate I've had between the first 2 days of class ever in this class. Anyway, welcome back. Before we dive in, any questions, comments, other things for me? Yeah. In its current spelling, from Pennsylvania. My great-great-grandfather immigrated from what was then the Hungarian Empire. Prior to that was part of Ruthenia, according to him, which hasn't existed as a country for very, very many years. But that's a relatively small part of my ancestry. Any other questions? Yes?
I was just wondering, when submitting assignments, what should we like see?
Oh yeah, so I added a submission page now. Let's go look at the submission page. Please let me in. Hooray! All right, so when you submit, you should have a list of everything you have submitted. Instantly, if you haven't seen this yet, when you submit, you just tell me what language you're using, what assignment it is. Okay? And then you submit. And I try to run it for homework 0. I don't try to run it for homework 1. I tested that it was working. I may try to run it at some point. But I tried to run homework, submit homework 1. It didn't work. But you should be able to submit other things, and it will try to run it. And when it's done, it should show you your status. And it might say, total pixels wrong, should be 0, 0, hooray! It may say we compiled but failed to run. I could also say it failed to compile. It should give you some message about what's going on. If you can't figure out why it's giving you the message it's giving you, it means that I'm not running it the way you're running it. And let me know, probably Piazza, and we will try to figure out how to make my server and your computer do the same thing. Yes?
So should all the homeworks be named like homework 0, homework 1? This
actually depends on your language, weirdly. So some languages care a lot more about file names than other languages. So if I have to guess what the file is named, then I expect it to be named homework 0, homework 1. And some languages care about capitalization, right? So if you're submitting Java, it better be named HW0 with a capital H and W. I think it gives you a warning if it's named something else. Anyway, yeah.
And so when we email you about if we're using a different language, what should we include in the email?
Yeah, so if you want to use a language that's not on this list, tell me what language you want to use, and if you can, give me the command line you expect to use to build it. That will jumpstart me in getting it working on my end. And if you need any image libraries or the like, I can usually figure out what those are. I might be able to point you to them, but if not, tell me what you want. Yes? Yeah.
Should we make a makefile for C++ or C
programs? I am currently just using Clang or Clang++ directly from the command line. If we decide we need make instead, let me know that. But right now, the only ones I think I doubt you'll have complicated enough programs to need that. But if you do, let me know and we'll figure it out. Yes? I libc in libpng, miniz, libz, libx, a handful of other things like that. Yes? Back in the front, yeah.
For C++, do you want to pass in the text file as a command line argument or just have us read it indirectly?
Yes? All of the programs in all of the languages will give in one command line argument that is the name of a file you are to read. Yes?
So all the homeworks online right now finalized, or are some of them like tentative?
So 1 through 3 are the way they're going to be. 4 isn't online yet. 5 may change depending on how the middle of the class goes. But 1 through 3 are the way they're going to be. If you want to start doing them all right now, go for it. Yes?
So what if you have like multiple helper files?
So you should be able to submit a whole bunch of things at once. You should be able to go here and say, hey, there's nothing on that folder. All right, where do I have stuff? Anyway, you should be able to shift select or control select and grab a bunch of different things and submit them all at once. I will store all the files you've given me, but the test will only be run on the most recent batch you gave at once. If you're using Rust or just because I could, also D, you can submit a zip or tar file. You actually may always be able to do that, but it isn't working perfectly for all the others. But you should just grab the files and submit them to me, typically. And we may add more features as needed. But the purpose of Omri's Ear is to find out how I run the code you want to give me. So if it doesn't work, go to Piazza, tell me what you're trying to do, and I'll try to make the server do that. Yeah?
Oh, yeah. So for if I do EDU in C++, so is there a file name that I need to put on the main function? Should I just call it main.cpp or hwp?
I don't care, as long as only one of your files has a main.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The compiler will notice which one has the main, turn it into the executable, I'll run the executable, everything should be fine. Other questions about submissions? I'm just curious. Have any of you submitted something that ended up saying total pixels wrong, 0? Okay, non-zero. Hooray, it works for more than just me. We will see how if we can get it to everybody soon. All right. Other questions? Or about this or other things? Yeah?
Is that like a small person or a giant fish?
Oh, you mean the sketch? Oh, right. Yeah, I could go either way.
Are the arrows just be like force vectors?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, sure, why not? Let's say they're force vectors. Any other questions? All right. We will dive into the main thing we're going to do today, but I also want to orient you a little bit about how I run this class. So when I was an undergrad many years ago, I was required to read this article, The Student, the Fish, and Auguses. I really like it. I've tried assigning it for reading for students, and I found out you don't. Anyway, the basic premise of this story is that a guy that wants to learn about entomology is forced to stare at a fish for a long time. And he learns things about what the fish looks like. There are lots of interesting things to learn about this story. I hope some of you will enjoy it, but if not, that's fine. But typically, in graphics, what I will do is I'll begin usually each lecture, sometimes only every other if we're going a little slower than I had hoped. And you will describe something you saw in the world that looks odd, and I will describe why it looks that way. Okay, and this is how we are going to randomly sample the world of looking at things. So what is something you've noticed recently? It's like, huh, I wonder why it looks like that. What is the fish you have looked at recently? Yeah?
Fish with all the people on top of it.
Yeah, I don't really mean like, I didn't expect to see that. I meant like, I don't know why it glistens, that kind of thing. Yeah?
On like a really hot day, you know, if you look in the distance, kind of see the reflection of like,
yeah,
the horizon. Or
yeah, and what do we call this phenomena?
Mirage.
Mirage. It has its own name. All right, yeah, let's talk about how mirages work. We'll try. I'm just curious, how many of you have already had somebody describe to you the physics of mirages at one point and still remembered enough to explain? Right, that's what I thought. All right, great. Let's start by debunking a myth. How fast is the speed of light?
Very fast. Pretty slow with the galactic.
Yeah, 5.88 times 10 to the something meters per second. 10 to the...
That was 2.899.
Oh, I may have it wrong. 2.899. Anyway, there's some number. Some big number, right? But a constant, C, right? We think of it as a constant. Guess what? It's not! That's the constant of the speed of the light in a vacuum. In any other medium, it goes slower. Sometimes a lot slower. For example, if you get, I think it's sodium, I could have it wrong, I think it's sodium, down to, say, a quarter Kelvin, the speed of light drops down to be measured in, like, you know, the speed of a car. It's like 30 miles an hour or something. But typically it goes a reasonable fraction of that. But sometimes it goes slower and sometimes it goes faster. This causes a lot of different visual phenomena. We'll get to talk about many of them over time. But in particular, if we think about air, it moves faster if it's hot, if the air is hot, and slower if it's cold. Roughly speaking, a reasonable way of thinking about this a little bit, air is made out of molecules. They bounce around faster when it's hot. When they bounce around faster, they push into each other more and they expand. So cold air has molecules closer together than hot air. And waves of light traveling as a wave, sort of propagating through here. When they bump into something, they sort of have to wiggle around it. So they don't go quite a straight line in their waveform, even though the particles are going in straight lines because quantum, right? Anyway, the farther away they are, the less it needs to wiggle. And so the faster it can get through. This is a gross oversimplification of optics, but it'll do for the time being, okay? So if air goes faster in, light goes faster in hot air, this causes mirages. To understand why, I'm now going to do an object lesson. I am going to act like light that has hot air on my right side and cold air on my left. Since I'm going to move faster through the hot air, my right leg needs to move faster than my left leg. And as I try to do that, I bump into the board, okay? Just by moving my right leg faster than my left. You can also do this tires, other things like that, and so on. So, what happens on a hot day is we have sunlight. Oh, this is going to work easier if I use a different color background. All right, we have sunlight coming from the sun. We will talk at some point, I'm sure, about why it's yellow. Anyway, we have rays of sunlight coming down. They hit the ground. Some of them bounce off. Hooray, that's why we can see the ground. But some of them get absorbed. And when they get absorbed, they make the ground hot. And so the ground in the air close to the ground is hotter than the air above the ground. So we have a layer of hotter air down by the ground than up above. And so then when we are looking at whatever it is we're looking at out in the distance, I don't know, maybe we're looking at a tree and we are standing over here looking at it, okay? And the wavelengths of light that leave the tree and go down towards the ground are moving faster close to ground than farther away. And so it actually bends up a little bit and hits our eye. And so we see what looks like the ground is a mirror because the ground is hot. Questions about mirages? All right, we'll get to do some of this every class period, so you'll get to think about how other things are going. As you're going along in life, I would encourage you to look around and say, why does it look that way? And we will talk about it and figure out why it looks that way. All right, so that's about looking at fish. And now we're going to jump back into where we left off last time with raster graphics. Okay, so raster graphics. How did I define raster? Anyone remember the definition of raster? Yes?
It's a rectangular array of pixels, often a square.
A rectangular array of pixels. It's actually very rarely a square, but it is rectangular. What is a pixel?
Numerical value.
Sorry?
A numerical value.
A number?
Yeah.
It's usually actually more than one number. It could be three, it could be four, it could be one. What's the purpose of a pixel? Yeah. It's a color. Okay? So when we think about raster graphics, we think about a grid where each square in the grid has one color. Okay? The pixels are usually square, although they don't have to be, and we'll look a little bit about what pixels actually look like today as well. But let's just sort of do a little example. Here I'll throw a raster up on the screen in nice big boxes so we can see it easily. The basic idea here, and we talked about this a little bit, but I'll remember it again, right, is that each square is theoretically filled with a single solid color. Okay? And different squares might be filled with different colors. And by filling all of the squares with colors, we can represent a picture. At least this is the concept behind rasters. And because they're just all colors, we number all of the colors. We'll talk about how we number all of the colors and probably on Tuesday. We probably won't get to that today. But we will just come up with a set of numbers to describe this color. And so, for example, the number that is traditionally used to describe that color is 255.00. And the number that's traditionally used to describe that color is 00255. And anyway, we'll learn about all of these different color models and how you assign colors to the numbers and so on. But once I know that, I can then describe the whole picture with just a series of numbers. And I got the whole thing, ta-da, I have raster graphics. Just a random aside, I like etymology, the history of the words. Raster comes from a word meaning to rake. Because early on, we had these fancy devices called cathode ray tubes. Hey, A cathode is something, in this context, is something that generates electrons. And so what this had, literally, there was a little device here that shot out electrons. And it shot them at a screen that when an electron hit it, it glowed. Okay? For many years, this is how we made monitors for computers. We would put them inside a big box. And you had to have it a long way back because you were shooting electrons. You had to make it really heavy because if it fell over and broke, you could, like, anyway, right? Anyways, they're big, heavy devices. You needed a vacuum in here because electrons bump into things like air very well. So they're big, complicated, mostly big glass things to hold a vacuum. And then a little screen of phosphors. And our early cathode ray tube designs, we originally would just shoot the rays wherever we wanted light. This turned out to have lots of problems and tended to destroy CRTs over time. And then one day we realized, hey, we will just always run it down in rows. We'll just do one row or one scan line at a time. And we will vary the strength of the electrons as we go. Okay? And so we are raking across the screen, sometimes being bright and sometimes dim. And we do that across all of the rows many times a second because electrons are fast and we create a picture. And a lot of our terminology still comes from this physical technology, even though we almost never use this physical technology anymore, including the word raster, which refers to that raking pattern that goes across. We also still talk about scan lines. We even have some phosphorus techniques that are similar. Anyway, a lot of this the terminology has survived. So, yes?
What are the dots on that?
So what we would really do is the beam as it went across would sometimes have a lot of electrons and sometimes not very many. Okay. And that would create bright and dark regions on the screen. And by varying the number of electrons we are shooting per microsecond, we could change the brightness of any particular spot on the screen.
So you could correspond, if you were using a certain kind of display, you could correspond to like the pixels that you had.
That's right. That's right. So what happened is this tended to bleed, and so then at some point somebody realized, hey, we'll put a screen here with just holes in certain spots so we don't have to be as precise. And then those were the pixels. Yes?
How do you get color out?
So when you have the holes, there's actually several different techniques you can do, but basically you put a colored film on the side of the holes, or the phosphors on the other side of them. Sometimes some of them would actually have multiple electron guns to shoot into different holes and specially aligned so they couldn't hit to the others. Or you could just try doing the timing, but usually you'd actually have separate little guns that the holes and the phosphors are lined up in such a way that this gun can only hit the red ones. Other questions about antiquated technology? All right. So this was the idea behind this, is why we call them a raster based on this raking. Is that important? No, it's just trivia, right? I'm not going to quiz you on the origin of the word. But that allows us to draw pictures. So we are going to start today picking up sort of where we left off last time. Last time I asked you about how do we draw a line. So we're going to draw lines. I have graph paper here. I think I have as many as there are people. Could I have a few people pass these out? Everybody gets one? Anybody? Anybody want to walk? Hooray! So, grab a raster. Okay? We'll spend a little time passing these out. You will need a writing implement. You are welcome to work with whoever you're next to for this exercise. And we don't need to count exactly if there's extras. I'm sure they'll find the right place.
That's hard.
Okay. As these are being passed out, let me describe the first task I'm going to give you. First, let me describe some of the terminology I'm going to use. I'm going to say draw. When I say draw, what I mean is fill pixels. A pixel is either filled or it isn't filled. You can't fill the left half of a pixel. That's what pixels are, okay? So you're going to fill pixels. I want a line, but I want a particular line. I want a rise of 8 and a run of 11. Okay, I don't care which direction you say is which, but I want this line. I want you to fill in pixels to make that. Questions about what I want you to do? Once you finish, you're then going to share it with the person next to you or somebody else, and we'll see if you all drew it the same. We'll talk about it. We, does anybody have extra paper? There's a few pieces here. Anybody have extra paper? Sorry, I thought I made more than I needed, but I was wrong. That's it. Let me see if something ended up in the bottom of my bag, maybe. Ah, no! I totally looked at how many people are enrolled and made 10 more than I had, but I must have left them somewhere. I don't have them. Sorry, we have one spare. If anybody is willing to work with their neighbor instead, maybe you can give somebody the back of your paper. We've got a whole region of the room that doesn't have them. Thank you, thank you. Who needs paper? I've got two left. Sorry. Share. My fault. Results. Let's start just by counting filled squares. Hey? Does anybody have fewer than 8 filled squares? Anybody have fewer than 11 filled squares? Does anybody have more than 11 filled squares? Okay. Do we have anybody have more than 19 filled squares? More than 19. We do have one more than 19. All right. So we don't even know how many squares to fill. How many of you have 14 filled squares? A tiny number of you. All right, great. Let's talk about different basic approaches to this. First, I just want somebody to describe to me how am I going to create your line. So somebody tell me how to do this. Let's just arbitrarily say, I'll let you tell me where to start and everything. Who wants to describe how to draw their line? Yes.
I started in the bottom left corner.
Okay.
And then I drew a point in the middle of that.
Okay.
And then I went up 8 pixels.
Ah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
And then I went over 11 pixels.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
And then I drew a dot in the middle of that. I took a straight edge and connected the two.
Okay, there. Let's just see.
I just connected the two.
All right. It's not quite straight, but it's close-ish.
And then I colored in every pixel the line went over.
Colored every pixel the line touches.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to color every pixel the line touches, like this. All right. I don't think it went right through the corner there. I'm not sure it was supposed to, but all right. Like this?
Yeah.
Maybe. I clearly didn't draw a straight line.
Close, yeah.
All right. Other approaches to how to do this. Somebody give me a different general approach of how to do this. Yeah.
I colored in the bottom
of the
pixel. And then also went up 8 and over 11.
Okay.
And then I thought, like, if it was a square or like a line, then it would just be like just going diagonally. So
okay.
It started like the one more square like that way, that one, and the same on the other side, And then because those won't match, if you just build them like that, I filled in the one to the right of that, and the ones to the left. And then I went diagonally again a couple times. And then, well, in the middle, I also had to.
I may have counted wrong.
Yeah.
I think this is an 8 by 10, not an 8 by 11. So, yeah, all right. All right. This is an approach, yeah.
I tried to go right. I started at 0, 0, then I tried to go right one up to level number 8, but I couldn't add fast enough to do that. But it would be like if it was in between a pixel, like one of those.
Okay, sorry. So you start here, and then you do what?
Oh, I go up 11 over 8. I think I read the scope wrong, but I thought the scope was 11 over 8, so...
Okay.
I went up, I drew a point where I thought that would be, and then that was like in between.
Just thought, I think it's over here?
Like, how it goes...
Or did you count? Or, I'm not following.
I'm going right one, and then up like what I thought the scope was.
Oh, I see. Something like this?
Yeah, sort of like that.
Just sort of eyeballing it. Like that?
Yeah.
No, okay, I'm clearly missing some detail, but this is an approach we could imagine working, right? Hope we're pointing in the right direction. Okay. Yeah.
I think he's saying he did the same approach as the filling in every pixel, but he only filled in the pixel that was
same as this one?
Yeah, but only filling in the pixel that was at the midpoint of the...
Is this what you were saying?
Okay. No.
Okay, but that is also a valid approach, so let's try that. Why not? All right, we're going to spend so long drawing lines, we don't remember what the rest of the class is about. Okay, so if we make a point here, and there, and draw a line, and then I could say, what's the closest pixel? Vertically or horizontally?
The horizontal midpoint.
The horizontal midpoint, okay.
Oh, sorry. Within each column.
Within each column, what's the horizontal midpoint?
Yes. And then fill in the pixel.
Okay, so I say there, and there, and there, and there, and so on, like this? Mm-hmm. Okay. And if I can do the horizontal, I suppose I could do the vertical. Okay, so I could also have done this same idea. I could have said, okay, the vertical midpoint is there, and there, and there. And I clearly can't draw straight lines. But that's okay. All right. So maybe I could fill in those pixels, just whatever pixels those points fall in. So many options. Okay. We're going to talk about specific algorithms to get different kinds of lines. But before we do that, we want to talk about general concepts. What are we going for in these approaches? Okay. And so we're going to talk about several different properties that we can think about having just lines have on a grid. The first one we're going to talk about is the difference between 4-connect and 8-connect. We typically want a line to be connected, to not have gaps. Okay? And so we typically think about this in the terms of how is it connected? In particular, the basic version of this question we can ask is, how many pixels are connected to that pixel? How many pixels are next to that pixel? Is it 4 or is it 8? There's no obvious right answer. Maybe it's 4, those 4, or maybe it's 8, those 8. And you can make either decision. Okay? If we go back and look at the lines that I drew, we'll notice that this one was mostly 4 connected. Except right here where I went over the corner. And we have a 4 connect break in the line. But every other pixel you can get by going to one of the 4 neighbors to another pixel in the line. This would be considered a 4 connected line, except for that one break. This would be considered an 8 connected line. Because I sometimes have to go diagonally to get to the next pixel. So I have to consider the 8 neighbors to see where the line continues instead of just the 4. It's not obvious which one is right. And as we get more and more pixels on the screen, we think about this less and less often. But as we think about 4 connect and 8 connect, this leads to other weird questions when you do things like what is inside. So if I were to make here a 4 connected circle of quite small size, okay, so I'm going to fill in these spots. Okay, how many pixels are inside this circle? Okay. Is this circle closed?
No.
Yes? Okay. It's 8 connected to itself, but it isn't 8 connect closed. It is, however, 4 connect closed. Okay? Right? So if I were to fill in a pixel in the middle here, and then all of its 4 connected neighbors that haven't crossed the boundary, I will fill in the middle. So if I fill in a 4 connect, and if I have my boundary 8 connect, this will work. But if I try to do them both 8 connect, then I'll end up spilling out of the boundaries and going places I didn't need to go. Okay? Now, we don't spend a lot of time in modern graphics dealing with flood fill and the like, but this used to be a big topic, and it's still worth understanding as we're thinking about the problems with squares. Question?
When do you consider a 4 connect versus an 8 connect in this instance, since on the sides there are 4 connected, but there's an 8 connected?
Right, so every line that is 8 connected is, sorry, that is 4 connected is also 8 connected, because the 4 are a subset of the 8. Mm-hmm. So we would consider the boundary as a whole to be 8 connected, because there are places where a 4 connect isn't enough. Does that answer your question? I thought I saw a hand over here in the corner of my eye. I was wrong. Yes?
So is that not 4 connect closed then?
It is. For filling it, I want to 4 connected. It is closed from a filling standpoint and 4 connected, but the boundary is 8 connected. If I think about the boundary, if I want to say this is one shape, I have to look at the 8 neighbors. So it's only contiguous in an 8 connected sense. But because it's contiguous in 8 connected sense, then it blocks 4 connected adjacencies of things from inside and outside. This is weird. It's probably not worth spending a huge amount of time and energy thinking about. It's just worth commenting, I suppose, at the base level here, is that neighboring is not an obvious operation with squares. Because of this, there have been proposals that we should use hexagonal pixels instead of square. There's no ambiguity there. It turns out they're just harder to manufacture. And so we don't. And that's really the reason that we don't manufacture hexagonal pixels. It's just easier to do squares. Although, that's not quite as transparent as it might seem. Let's just do a random image search for pixel close-up. Let's see what pixels actually look like. All right, these are pictures of actual screens. Let's just grab one here in particular. Here is a photograph with a telephoto zoom of an LCD television screen, okay? Similar to what you would see on your laptop. When I zoom in, this is a weird looking thing. This is a white screen, okay? And its whiteness might become a little clearer if I were to zoom, well, not yet, I can't zoom out enough. Anyway, but you'll notice we have these weird little, like, there's red bars and green bars and like blue, and then we have cyan and orange and black, and what's going on? Conceptually, each of these chunks is one pixel. But it's hard to make a single thing that can be lots of colors, and so we make different bands of colors that combined will allow us to draw different colors. Okay? They don't have to look like this. So if we look at this one, for example, this one uses a sort of a pseudo-hexagonal version of tiles. And this is actually, there is a picture of a pencil on this screen. It is darker here than other places. But you look at this and you realize, wait a minute, you just said there's not hexagons. Here are hexagons. Whoa! Right, but we have, it turns out, red, green, and blue is three colors. And so you could think of these as being like little triangular pixels. But turns out triangles aren't very useful for things, and so actually group them in different ways. Anyway, physically manufacturing a screen that acts like a pixel grid is a little bit complicated. And there's lots of different ways you can do that. But you typically end up with just single colors in different places that somehow combine to make you roughly a squarish grid of things. And if you want to pull out a magnifying glass and look really closely at your screens, you will see they have some version of this. They all do. Okay? This is how we actually make screens. So the abstraction of a pixel is not actually accurate. Yes?
So the parts that compose that single pixel on those screens are called subpixels?
Yes. So they don't usually need a name, but occasionally we'll talk about these in subpixels. And this brings up the point of what we call subpixel anti-aliasing, although why that's the name of it is going to be a little unclear. But let's just talk about the concept here. I think I'm going to need different colors here. All right, so let us give ourselves a grid here. Screens actually emit light, so I'm going to start in black. If I were to think each of these pixels was a red bar, a green bar, and a blue bar, and I wanted to draw a line from here to here, I could pretend like I had squares. But I could also realize, actually, I don't have squares. I actually have these sort of tall, thin rectangles of different colors. And so I could do everything we just did about how we draw lines, but do it on these subpixels instead. And so I could decide that I want, let's grab here. I want this green bar here, and this green bar here, and this green bar here. And of the reds, I want this red, and this red. And of the blues, where's my blue? Of the blues, I want this one, and this one. And I could say that is my line. Okay, to try to get a sub-pixel resolution for my line. Okay, this is fairly uncommonly done because if you're doing something this thin and precise, it's going to look multicolored rainbowish. And who's going to like that look, okay? But it is possible to do this. And every once in a while, somebody will talk about the value of doing this. This will actually show up a reasonable amount when we talk about anti-aliased fonts. Most computers will do sub-pixel fuzzing of the boundaries of text because humans are really, really good at seeing text. But anyway, we'll come back to that in a moment. But technically, they are different. Now, it is not guaranteed that any two screens will have the same order of these colors. And so if I assumed you had red, green, blue, but you really have blue, green, red, and you were trying to set the pixels in the same color, it would look worse than a line because I get it all backwards. So usually we don't deal with this, but it is a thing that exists with our current generation of technologies, the way things are laid out, and has existed in different forms and different versions. Okay, thoughts, comments, questions about our basic ideas about rasters so far? All right, let's talk then about some principles we might want to get off of a raster's line. We talked about some basic algorithms for drawing lines, but the real problem is that lines are really, really, really skinny. Okay, actually, to show this, maybe I'm going to start without a grid. Let's imagine that I want to do a scene. Oh, wrong color. Let's imagine I want to draw a scene where I have some telephone poles, okay, vanishing out into the horizon with wires strung between them. I should probably put some more poles there so it could be believable. All right, I want to draw this scene, okay? The problem with this scene is that wires out in the distance are vanishingly tiny. Way, way smaller than I'm likely to want to draw in any given pixel. So let's zoom in and try to see what I mean here. Let's assume that these are my pixels. Should I draw the wires at all? Maybe in the foreground. Okay? But if I draw the wires in the foreground, then what's my scene going to look like? I'm going to see, here's a telephone pole, here is its wire, there is a telephone pole, there is a telephone pole. And you're like, what happened to the wire? I can't do that. This will confuse people. But that's probably the right thing to do because maybe it's close to a pixel wide over here and not back there. Okay? So there's lots of different rules I could try doing this. I could say, okay, you know, wires aren't really lines. They have a tiny bit of width to them. So maybe I can say, I will draw the wire on any pixel that the width of it goes right over the center of the pixel. So it'll show up in this pixel. No, maybe this pixel will show the wire. Oh, it looks like it goes right over the center in that pixel, so that pixel will have a wire. Hey, this will, on average, give me the right number of pixels on the wire. It's a little random, but on average, this should work. But it will totally look bad, right? Somebody will look at it, and then instead of having a wire that just goes and stops, it'll like sort of become a dotted wire. And that will look even worse, because eyes are really good at noticing shapes. Far better than they are sort of integrating over randomly sampled things. So maybe I will decide to not draw the wire at all. Maybe I'll decide to draw all of the pixels the wire comes across. And then I'll essentially get this big fat wire, right? That just gets fatter and fatter as it goes farther and farther away and becomes gargantuanly large from our perspective because I'm stuck to pixels. That doesn't seem like a great solution either, okay? So all of the ways we could do this don't seem great. So what should we actually do? Let's find out what cameras do. Sorry, it was a rhetorical question that I didn't clearly identify as rhetorical. Let's look for telephone wire perspective. I don't know if this will work. Yeah, all right, here is a picture of telephone wires. Let's pick one that's nice and clean and has good perspective. Yeah, this one will do. All right, so I'm going to get this file, okay? Here I have a picture that has telephone wires going out into the distance. Let's zoom in and see what we actually see. To see this very well, we're going to need it to be darker in here. Darkness coming up. Darker still. All right, what do you notice about these wires? Some are thick and some are thin. Okay, are any of them thicker than a pixel? Can you see the pixels here? I wonder if I can zoom in even more. I can't zoom in anymore, sorry.
Are they just lighter in color?
They're pale. Okay, you can, all right, so let me give an idea of how you see pixels when they're too small to see. Let's look at one of these almost horizontal wires. You might notice that this almost horizontal wire appears to get sort of more focused and more blurry, and more focused and more blurry, and more focused and more blurry. I don't know if you can see that in the back. Sorry, I thought I could zoom in more than this. What's happening there is the blurry areas where it's crossing from one pixel to the next. So these are sort of the distance of a pixel is sort of half the width of the blurry area or the width of the less blurry area. We have this thing. And then these wires are way thinner than a pixel, but we just barely color the pixels in. We sort of half draw the lines. Also, what about all this like junk? The like pale pixels and things. Yeah. Yeah. So instead of giving you the picture that was actually taken, we made something that approximates the picture and has noise. We'll talk some more about image formats, I think, next week. But this is a compressed image, so it has extra noise there that we just happen to know humans aren't good at noticing. And so we add noise, and it makes our life simpler to make small files, and away we go. So what does all of that mean for us when we are trying to draw something? So let's consider how we go about drawing a line. We have thus far, most of you, all of you that shared your ways of drawing lines, either filled in a pixel all the way or not at all. And I sort of prompted you to do that by saying you couldn't fill in the left half. But I didn't say you had to fill it in darkly. Okay? So I could have a pixel that I filled in all the way. A bright pixel on my screen. And then I can have a pixel that I just sort of half filled in, and a pixel I just sort of half filled in, and then a pixel I fill in all the way. Okay? And so I could use these sort of mid-tones, these half-filled ins, there's different names for them, to try to get across the idea that it isn't really just one of these two pixels, it's sort of part of each of them. Okay. The usual term for this, there's different terms for it. Sometimes we call it halftoning. Sometimes we call it anti-aliasing. Okay. And we'll talk some more about what aliases are. It'll be easier to talk about this with ray tracing. But the idea here is we can use things that aren't exactly what we want to see to understand what's going on. And to get a better idea about this idea, let's imagine that instead of saying we're drawing a line, we say we are drawing this rectangle. Okay? If that's the rectangle I want to fill in, then this pixel is almost entirely filled in with rectangle. And so this pixel should be very bright. But this pixel is only about half filled in with rectangle. And so only half make it bright. Okay? And it's half filled in with non-rectangle, so make it half dark. And so we can average the different things that would be there if we had smaller pixels. And that can give us a different way of seeing the scene. This is what cameras do. A camera just collects light and happens to average it out, either chemically or electrically, depending on how they're designed, into a region. And so if some parts of the pixel would be bright and some would be dark, it sort of gets fuzzed out into a half a bright pixel. And this is another way of trying to draw a shape. Okay? So we have these approaches we can use. So we can either try to 4-connect or 8-connect our lines in different ways. We can try to approximate what would happen if there was a rectangle there instead and fill in some of the pixels not all of the way. What would that look like if we think about our telephone wires. Well, all of these pixels would be just barely filled in. Right? There's only a little bit of wire in each of them, so we have a very faint suggestion that maybe there's something here. And none of them would be all on or all off. They get fainter as we got farther away, but in a fairly gradual way, so our eye wouldn't be bothered by their vanishing. Question?
What about the rest of the pixel? Because like there's things behind the wire, right?
Yeah. So in the ideal world, I would want to know what is the entire scene, right? Like, I don't know, maybe, oh, I should probably not draw in white on a white background, right? Maybe I have a road here, and maybe it has dashed lines, and maybe there's a car driving down the road, right? And I don't know, maybe there's a bird flying over here, maybe a strike of lightning, who knows what's going on in the scene. Right? And then I would say, okay, in this pixel, what would be the sources of light if this were real? The lightning would probably completely wash away everything else, and this would just be a really bright pixel, right? But if I didn't have the lightning there, or if I look at this pixel over here, maybe I've got a tail end of a bird, and I've got a little telephone wire, maybe I've got some grass here and some blue sky. I average up all those colors and draw that. And that's what the real world does. So if we're trying to mimic cameras, that's the approach we want to try to achieve. Doing that turns out to be really computationally hard. And we'll talk some more about why that's hard as we move along and approaches people do for it. Other questions about these ideas? Okay, so in the reading, for today on the schedule, we had a Wikipedia article. And it began with a picture. Hey, it started with a smiley face. And this is a smiley face that tries to get at this idea of halftoning or anti-aliasing. This is supposed to look like, and it's easier to see in the tiny little picture, a uniformly wide black boundary around a yellow face. But when you zoom up, there are almost no black pixels at all. Because the theoretic circle almost never completely covers a pixel. And so instead, while occasionally at the bottom and edges we have just the boundary, all the other places we either have some background color and boundary or we have some face and boundary. Okay? We mix them up. And so this is what we try to do when you try to make pictures that look higher resolution than their screens. Okay? We average out what the pixels do. Thoughts, comments, questions about rasters, representing things in rasters, this idea of halftoning, anything I can clarify? Okay, so now I'm going to tell you the most common way we actually draw lines, which is going to be unlike any of the ones we've talked about so far. In fact, it's going to have holes. The most common way of drawing lines has holes. I'm going to use a somewhat steeper line to make this clearer. If I'm going to draw a line from here to here, I would typically fill in 3 pixels. I would typically say, all right, it's this pixel, it's, I don't know, that pixel, and that's it. But I don't do this because I want to draw the line. I do it because almost always I care about lines because they're the edges of things. Okay? And so maybe this was supposed to be, I don't know, maybe a triangle. Let's get a fairly simple shape. Okay? If I want to fill in a triangle, then I want to know how to sort of fill it in on the sides. And so I want to fill in these pixels and these pixels and these pixels, and maybe that pixel or that pixel, okay? But to know this sort of set of pixels to fill in, I'm going to walk along the lines, only generating one spot along the line for every row of pixels I want to fill in, okay? And so often when I draw lines, this is how I actually do it. The other reason this might be how I want to actually do it is if I know what those pixels are, I can generate all of the other kinds of lines too. Let's see what I mean by that. If I know that I have a line that sort of in stepping vertically in Y, it would have those three spots. I can draw a four connect line. A four connect line will go halfway out on each row. Halfway between this spot and the next one on each row. And there is my four connect line, my eight connect line, okay? If I want a four connect line, I just need to take one extra pixel each of the places that it changes rows. And now I have an eight connect line. Question?
Have you ever taken it to the right rather than up?
Arbitrary. Usually you don't put it exactly in the middle, but usually there's always going to be some rounding rule. And actually in practice, I'd only do one of the two endpoints as well. We'll talk some more about pixel perfect later. Yeah?
How do you know to do three pixels instead of two?
So what we do is we take the distance. So there's different ways you do it. You either do at the center of every y or the center of every x. I believe one of the algorithms we had actually talked about this idea. So where does the theoretic mathematical line cross the center point of pixels? If I want to draw lines, I want to pick the smaller number and then fill in between. It's more efficient than picking the larger number, although the larger number will also work if I want to do that. If I want to fill across it, I pick the direction that I'm not going to fill. So if I'm filling rows, then I'll pick Y's instead of X's as those places to find those spots. But again, what are those spots? Right? I have some theoretic line. Maybe it doesn't have to begin or end in a pixel. I just find where does it cross the center point of any given row of pixels. And so the points that I'm looking for are these points, okay, in either x or y. And with those points, I can create my four connect line, I can create my eight connect line, I can fill in between. I can even use these to do some of that graying, that halfway filling in of a line. And we'll talk about that algorithm here in a moment. Before I move into half filling with these, questions about how I generate these, anybody want me to talk about this in a different way? There are other descriptions of this we could use as well.
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear what you mean by like intersecting the center.
All right. I want to draw a line. Okay? This is my goal. So I have a mathematical concept of a line segment that exists in my head. And I want to put it into the grid. So I figure out what the grid is. And then I know I want some pixels in the grid. Pixels have an x and y coordinate. So I'm going to look at this center y of one row of pixels, and I'm going to say, where did that intersect the actual line? That's one of the points that's important. And then I have this point that intersects the center of that row's y, and this point that intersects the center of that row's y, and this point that intersects the center of that row's y, and those are the points that I will use. Just those four for this line. Okay? And then knowing those, I could then do a variety of different things. I could round them over into the pixel they're nearest to and fill in those pixels to create a line with holes in it, which I probably don't want. I could also sort of like spread them out a little bit to make sure they connect in an 8 sense, or spread them out more to make sure they connect in a 4 sense, right? To create the line I want to create. So you may want a different explanation of how we do these lines. All right, 15 minutes. Yeah, all right. Once I have these, I can also make a halftone line, an anti-alias line. And the algorithm, there's several ways of doing this. I'm going to describe one that's called the Wu algorithm. Wu lines, named after somebody Wu. I used to know his first name. I should remember. It's bad that I've forgotten. Anyway, the Wu line runs as follows. We find the intersections along the longer distance. So if it's primarily horizontal line, we find the intersections in the x space. So we find the longer distance intersections of our line. Okay? And then for each of those points, we pick the two pixel centers it's closest to in that direction. So for example, this one is somewhere between these two pixel centers. So I notice I have this pixel and this pixel that are sort of covered by this line. And then I fill them in with a darkness or a brightness depending on how close it is to the relative centers. So this one's about two-thirds in the bottom one, about one-third to the top one. Right? Like there's, this is about two-thirds of the distance, and this is about one-third of the distance. So I do the opposite ratio of how much I fill it in. I'm one-third away from this, so I'm going to fill this one in two-thirds full. And I'm two-thirds away from that, so I'm going to fill that one in one-third full. Okay? And then I'll do the same thing for each other pixel. All right? So I'd say this is between that and that, and maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's a quarter away, so I'll fill this one in three-quarters. And that's three-quarters away, so I'll fill it in one-quarter. Okay? And this one is shockingly close to being dead center on this one, so I will barely touch this pixel and almost completely fill in this one. Okay? And I will continue in that pattern. For each of these, I will say, what two pixels is it between? Fill in the one it's closer to more fully than the one it's farther to, using the ratio of distances to figure out what that is. And this will create a nice, smooth-looking line. Okay? It will not create a uniformly bright line, but it will create a smooth-looking line. Before we talk about uniform brightness, question about how this algorithm works.
How does this...
Yeah?
Is it arbitrary whether you do it vertically or horizontally?
You do whichever is the longer distance. So you find intersections along the longer distance and then use the opposite one to compare pixel centers. So if this was a vertical-ish line, I would have found these intersections instead. Yes?
Would there ever be a case where the same pixel was one of the two closest to two of the intersections?
No. Why not? Why will I never look at the same pixel twice to have to fill it in at two different brightnesses? Yeah?
You're always moving on to the next column.
Yeah. Because I found intersections that were, in this case, here, in the center of them in Y, then I'm going to look at X for the two neighbors. And so I'm only looking at this Y once. And then I'll be looking at this Y next. And I'll be looking at this Y next. And because I'm never repeating a Y, I'm never going to repeat a pair of pixels. Yeah? How do you cross lines? You just draw them one at a time. Draw one, and then you draw another one on top of it. This actually is mathematically slightly inaccurate, but it gets pretty close to being correct. Yeah?
So like if we were saying like filling 3/4 and filling 1/4, would we just like adjust the alpha values on like?
So there's different ways of filling it in. We'll talk about that as we get to, probably on Tuesday, we'll talk about what alpha means and different colors. I think we have color models on Monday, don't we? Or Tuesday? Yeah. So we'll talk about how we actually do this as our topic for Tuesday. Okay. Weird things happen with woo shaded lines. Let's give an example. Let's suppose I have a line from here to here and another line from here to here. Okay? So I'm going to say, all right, what are the intersections of each of these lines? So I find this point and this point and this point and this point. Okay? Now here, I'm going to fill in this pixel all of the way and this pixel all of the way because these lines are one pixel wide and they're touching. And I'm going to do the same thing here because I go right through the middle. Okay? But as I look at this column here, I don't have that at all. This one is going to fill in this pixel and this pixel partway, and this one's going to fill in that pixel and that pixel partway. And so I'm going to end up with this one partway filled in, this one partway filled in, and then I'm going to fill in this one partway and this one partway. Okay? And I'm going to do the same thing here. I'm going to do that. This one is going to be partway, and this one is going to be partway, and this one is going to be partway, and this one is going to be partway. And I'll end up with a line that doesn't go all the way opaque in the middle. I would get something different if I said I have a line from here to here that is 2 pixels wide. Right? Because if I were to fill in this at 2 pixels wide at each step along the way, those intermediate pixels we filled in completely. I would not have 2 half shades on top of each other, I'd have completely filled in. So this is an approximation. A lot of the things you do in graphics are not exactly right, they're just computably right. And this is one example of where 2 half-shaded things on top of each other aren't mathematically accurate. We have lost, in the process of doing the Wu algorithm, we have lost the original geometry. We've lost what part of what, which half of the pixel was being colored. Okay? And because we've lost which half of the pixel is being colored, we do it twice. We color half, and then we color half of what's left, even if we should color all of what's left. Because we're not storing where we cut through this pixel. We're just storing that we cut through that pixel. I don't feel like I gave my best explanation ever of that. Thoughts, comments, questions? Somebody help me out, explain this more clearly. I can see a lot of puzzled looks. Can anybody help me clarify a question I might be able to answer to help me explain this idea? Yeah?
One question. So in this case, we have 2 lines. Let's say the first line fills in half a pixel.
Yeah.
And the second line also fills half of that pixel.
Yeah.
Is the pixel fully filled in or like 3/4 filled in?
Okay, yes, this is the part I was failing to mention. Thank you. All right. When I fill in half a pixel, what's the other half? It's whatever was already there. Okay? So, what do I mean by this? If I had, for example, red here already on the screen, and I were to fill in one of these pixels halfway with black, I would expect to get a mix of red and black. Where if these are filling in halfway with black on a white pixel, I get a mixture of black and white. Okay? So if I fill in a pixel halfway with black, I get halfway between white and black. If I then fill in that pixel again halfway with black, what do I get? I get 3/4 black, not black. This would be the right thing if I had a black shape here and a black shape here, each half covering this pixel. This pixel here should be 3/4 black. Okay? It would be the wrong thing if I had a shape that covered half of that pixel from this side and half of that pixel from that side. This pixel should be fully black. Because we do one thing at a time, the pixel doesn't know which half it was. And so it doesn't know if it should do this or that. Yes?
Well, for the bottom one, if you fit it in completely black in the middle area, you wouldn't be able to tell it's 2 objects. It was just 1 object.
Yes, and this is how the real world works. When you put 2 things of the same color completely touching each other, you can't see between them.
Well, yeah.
Right? I mean, you're right. It seems weird because you're like, I need to see there's a gap. Right? And maybe there is a tiny little gap there, but maybe I shouldn't have drawn the gap. Right? Maybe they're supposed to touch. And if they're supposed to touch, I don't want to see the gap. Okay? And actually, any approach to half shading is going, there is no way of half shading pixels that doesn't have some version of this problem. Either it fills in things it shouldn't or it lets through things it shouldn't. Half shading is always an approximation. And an approximation that doesn't compose nicely with itself. Okay? So if we really care about things being adjacent to each other, we don't half shade them. Because the half shading will have a problem. As a matter of fact, next to each other shapes is the common case in graphics. So we haven't really talked about 3D models yet, but if I want to represent, I don't know, some weird potato-shaped person, okay? The most common way to store a potato-shaped person in a computer is you store a bunch of triangles that approximate the surface of their skin. And if I were to draw the boundary between these triangles with holes, then I would draw a person with holes on their face. Right? Which I don't want to do. So we'll actually care quite a bit about this, and that means we can't use half shading. All solutions with half shading will fail. And so we'll come back to the weird rules about half shading when we're dealing with adjacent triangles a little bit later when we talk about 3D. But some of the things that make for nice looking lines when we're just drawing lines, when we try to apply them in other contexts, make bad looking things instead because they're an approximation. Question?
Wait, that, is that only an issue? You like first try to draw the left shape and then the right shape? Like if you just try to go like pixel by pixel, would that be an issue?
Right, so all this is assuming I'm taking the shape and turning it into pixels. In the context of what we said last time, everything I have done for this entire lecture, from the very beginning of when we gave you grids to fill in, we have been working in rasterization as opposed to ray tracing. At least I assume. Did any of you, when I gave you your graph paper, look at each individual square and say, should I fill in this one? No. Should I fill in this one? No. Should I fill in this one? Yes. Did any of you look at every square on your page? Great. Then we have only done rasterization today. Okay? Yeah, we have a few minutes. Let's talk about what would be the other way of drawing in a line. This is just sort of extra because we just have a few minutes left. The other way of drawing in a line was I'd say, this pixel, I want to draw this line here. I would say, mathematically, how far is this point from this line? And so I'd essentially find this distance, and I'd decide if it was close enough to fill in this pixel or not. Okay? And you can do that. You could scan through every single square here, find their point, find their distance from the line segment, decide whether to draw them or not. It's going to be a really slow way of doing things. It's going to be slow in a big O sense. The rasterizing algorithms we've talked about so far. Okay, the rasterize a line. What is the complexity of rasterizing a line? I know we haven't actually talked about real algorithms. Sorry, yeah, go ahead. Was that you? No, I heard a voice while I was talking.
It should be all of the length of the line.
The length of the line. That's how many pixels I have to fill in. And I just find all of those pixels. There may be some extra terms there, right? Some constants, but I should expect it approximately to be the length of the line. If I want to ray trace a line, what should I expect the big O of that to be? Yeah, the area of the screen. At a minimum, this is quadratically larger. Because I have a screen, the longest line I can make is approximately the square root of the size of the screen. Okay? So this is essentially, this is greater than or equal to the length squared. Right? So I save myself a lot of time by rasterizing a line. Now, for triangles, we could argue these could get close to each other, and we'll talk some more about that as we talk about triangles going forward. But we typically rasterize, especially in 2D, but any time we care about speed. It's just hugely faster. It is asymptotically faster. It is faster in almost every way we can look at it. The one way it isn't faster is in concurrency. So we don't do a good job about teaching concurrency. But if I wanted to check every single pixel and find out how close it is to the line, that seems slow. But each of them is completely independent to the others. What if I had a different computer computing each pixel? They could all do it at exactly the same time. And then we turn this from being big O the length of the line to being big O one. Okay? And so if I can get enough computers, this ray tracing approach starts to make sense. And we're just starting to get to the point where graphics cards are getting vaguely close to enough processors inside of them that we're starting to see ray tracing occasionally becoming efficient. But over time, we may actually see it reverse. Given another 20 years, it may be faster because we have more processors than we have pixels to do the ray tracing approach instead. And we'll talk some more about that as we talk about graphics cards. We have 1 minute. Any parting questions? Yes?
So, when you mentioned rasterizing earlier, you talked about a list of numbers.
Right. Yep, a raster can be a list of numbers.
Well, then to do this, wouldn't you have to go through the list because you don't have to, or would you just have like the index in the list?
All right, that's a great question, but we're out of time. We will come back to that at the beginning of class next time.